Most Canadians don't feel really confident about their financial planning abilities. Sure, there's tons of information online, but it can be tough to find the resources that connect with your circumstances. Saving tips are different for people living on social assistance or dealing with a whole bunch of other circumstances in life. National charity Prosper Canada recently launched its new Learning Hub, an online platform that offers access to an array of financial empowerment resources. Joining us now is Prosper Canada CEO Liz Mulholland. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce.
Who is the hub for?
The hub is for a whole range of people. I would say first and foremost, it's for folks who are working with people with low and modest incomes to help them improve their financial health. So community organizations, maybe credit unions, but also I think policymakers, researchers, and funders can also find things. And people with low and modest incomes themselves, if they're looking for some help with financial education, we've got some great tools and resources on there.
What were the gaps that you identified? Because literally there is an infinite amount of information on financial literacy from every perspective, it seems anyway. What were the things that you felt that your target audience really needed that wasn't there?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, a lot of the financial literacy material is not designed for people with low incomes whose financial situation looks very different. And the kind of challenges and the circumstances and the context are quite different than for people with higher incomes.
Yeah.
Also, I think we have specialized resources for Indigenous Canadians. So there weren't a lot of tailored resources for Indigenous people on there. So we have a nice money management guide with all sorts of activity sheets that folks can use that was co-developed with AFOA Canada, the Aboriginal and Financial Officers. We have tailored materials for newcomers. We have financial education materials in 10 different languages.
Wow.
So if people are working with folks in Tagalog or Spanish or Mandarin, they can find resources there that they can use in their own language.
What would be some examples of differences that someone who's, you know, middle-income Canadian, they're trying to save money by reducing their credit card debt versus someone who's literally trying to budget on, you know, two pennies that they're rubbing together. What are some of the differences that would manifest in what we try and teach people who are on a lower income?
Well, one of the key differences is one of the things we talk about with people with low incomes is asking them if they file their taxes.
Because there are so many things that kick in if they take that step.
Exactly. So taxes for middle income people mean, oh, I'm going to owe the government some money.
Right.
And they
don't
look
forward to that. Grab my money.
But filing your taxes if you have a low income usually means that you're going to get quite a bit of money from the government. And if you have children, quite a lot of money. So, but there's all sorts of tax benefits there. So we really want to encourage people to tax file. And if they don't know how to do that themselves or if they're finding it hard for some reason, then really to try and call their local 211 number and see if they can get access to a community tax clinic. An agency to help.
One of the things that I think most Canadians would know is that there's cultural differences for Canadians who are relatively new to this country versus people who have been here for generations. We don't have as rich an understanding of the cultural differences between urban Canadians, descendants from Scotland, and those First Nations. What are some of the differences that would be worthy of highlighting there?
Oh, that's such an interesting question.
It is. I did an interview with someone from AFOA, and I just think it's a fascinating area. We don't appreciate the way revenue is delivered sometimes to people who are on reserve, off reserve, how taxes, like it's just a whole.
Yeah, I'd say there's a difference in the what financial services they have access to. So if you're living in a remote northern First Nation community, you may not have a bank or a credit union in your community, whereas if you live in downtown Ottawa, you would be able to walk three blocks and sign up for a bank account. On a cultural level, though, I think, you know, we worked with our AFOA Canada and our Indigenous partners in trying to look at this whole question of financial health and what it means from an Indigenous perspective. And really what came across was it's really all about striving to achieve the right balance between your income and your spending, your saving and your investments. And your debts and taking on debt over your life course, but in a way that doesn't just pay attention to your financial health, but is also contributing to your spiritual, your physical, your emotional health as well. So it's really a much more holistic perspective than we're used to hearing financial things talked about in non-Indigenous culture. Another key difference that came up is we think of good financial habits as being the same for everyone, but in different cultures, they place a different value on things like saving or giving. And many Indigenous cultures are gift cultures, where giving to others is a very important part of the social dynamic, and where saving might be seen as hoarding or not sharing appropriately with fellow community members or extended family members. So these are important cultural differences that really change how people think about their financial behavior. And I don't want to suggest that nobody in Indigenous communities sees the importance of saving for the retirement. They do, but the way that you talk about these things and some of these things, it's different.
It's just different. We have listeners from coast to coast to coast from all different income brackets. But I would say that my hypothesis is there is very few people who understand the reality of what low-income Canadians are dealing with, because so much of our discourse is around RSPs and RESPs and all these things that are available to people of privilege. What would be the one thing that you think Canadians of higher incomes should know, appreciate, and empathize about for people who are not in their circumstance?
I think one of the most important things is understanding that many of the services that we provide to low-income people around income and other supports actually, in a perverse way, stop them from building their financial health. So if you're on social assistance, there are limits on the amount of savings or assets you can have, which seem logical to a point when you, to the average person, but when we actually look at it, it means that somebody can't keep $500 in their bank account for emergencies, which come to all of us. You know, if you're a working person who's working but on a very low income and still receiving social assistance, and your car breaks down and you can't get to work, that means you're now fully dependent on social assistance, that you're not making that transition into full-time paid employment. So, and those savings limits really prevent people from doing the things they need to do to become more self-sufficient, assuming that they are able to work. So it means they don't have the money to pay for tuition to go back to school or take a job training course. It means they can't launch that small business that could become a bigger business that would sustain them and help employ other people. So it's really important to remove these impediments, as well as providing active supports to people.
Give us the URL of the location for the Learning Hub so people who want to find out more
Learning Hub
can find it properly. I know. You're like, wait a second. I was supposed to memorize that. Where is it?
Learning Hub is at, not surprisingly, learninghub.prospercanada.org. Or you can just go to Prosper Canada's website at www.prospercanada.org and look in the resources section.
Right. Liz, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
And for the work that you do. Liz Mulholland, the CEO of Prosper Canada, on the organization's new Learning Hub.